This free resource is from the 2013 Spiritual Leadership Conference in Lancaster, California, hosted by Pastor Paul Chapel in the Lancaster Baptist Church. This lesson is entitled Preparation is the Key with Mrs. Diane Getch. Mrs. Getch has been teaching at West Coast Baptist College since the fall of 1996.
My life verse for teaching has always been in Timothy, 2 Timothy 2:15, and it says, and I'm sure you all know it, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Every time I read that verse, it's like a different word will stand out in my mind. There are so many, I mean, it's not a long verse, but every word means something, and they're very important. And of course, it starts with study. Well, study is you, the person that you are, and it's very important that we first, before we can ever teach, before we can really prepare, we have to prepare ourselves. And so, it's so important. It comes first, and I think that's why God put it first. Study, and why do we study as a teacher, especially a Christian teacher? To show thyself approved unto God. And so we're careful about our study, that we're not reading things that will hurt us, but will benefit us and will help us to be the best teachers that we can be, to be an example to others. The next word, a workman, is another very important word for teaching. If you want to have an occupation where you sit around and not do a whole lot of thinking or work, teaching is not for you. Teaching can wear you out in a day. I mean, especially if you're teaching a class where you arrive, you know, at 8 o'clock, maybe 7:30, they require you to come in earlier than the kids, which I always thought 30 minutes, you have to be there 30 minutes before the students. You do not want to arrive 5 minutes before the students, and they start coming in, and you're thinking, oh, wow, what do I do now? So 30 minutes is a good time. It's a good time for you to prepare and to pray and to get ready for the avalanche of children that are coming into the classroom. But you do need to be a workman, a person in action, doing. That's a teacher, isn't it? If you see a teacher that's always sitting at her desk and never in front of the classroom, that's not good. You need to be an active person. And then truth. The Bible says, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And truth is really who God is. And if you have the Bible as the core of your belief system, you will be a great teacher, because everything that you teach will be exemplifying that truth of God. And so truth, we think of the curriculum, and curriculum given by God. I don't know, do they have some? So number one is study, and number two is workman, and number three is truth. And so there's a little bit of definition there for you. And so we don't have a lot of blanks, but we do have those blanks, so you can fill those in. And so to remember 2 Timothy 2:15 is really everything that you need to know about teaching, that you have to study, and that you have to be a workman, a doer, not a sitter, and not lazy, but you do have to be a person of action, and then teaching a curriculum. And of course, our curriculum should be based on God's word, which is truth. And then I have a lot of things, and they did fill them all in, no blanks for you, but we will go over them. And like I said, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on most of these, since they have put them down here for you. You can read them and see their benefit, but I do want to have a division to them. And so number one is summer. Summer is a great time to prepare. Isn't that true? I can't tell you how much I get accomplished during the summer. I always thought, I want to be a teacher because you get your summers off. You don't get paid for it, especially not in the Christian ministry, but you still get it off. And I love that, because as we had children, it was a time for them. We went into evangelism after I had taught for 4 years. And when we went into evangelism, when September came, it was like, what am I doing here? You know, it was really an empty feeling. I felt like I should be in a classroom. It gets so part of you. After summer, you rest, you recharge, and then you start, you know, teaching again. But then about November, I started calming down, and I thought, you know, I only had John. He was only 2 months old, but I thought, he can be my student, and I'll be his teacher. And for the next 16 years, I taught our children as they were born and as they grew up. And I went through the entire curriculum of Abeka from age 4 all the way through 11th grade. And then John, we stopped traveling for 2 years so he could graduate in a Christian school and get started in college. And so that was the first time that we had stopped. But truly, you know, summer is a great time to prepare. So let's look at some things that we can do in the summer to help us. First of all, never get so excited about summer like your students do. The last week, it's like so hard to keep your students in their seat, not talking. But, you know, that's our job. So we can't just let them party the last week. But afterwards, don't you start partying. Make sure you close up all your grades very accurately. And then make your permanent files so that they are permanent. I went to Maranatha the second year that Maranatha Baptist College was a college in Watertown, Wisconsin. I grew up in Rockford, Illinois. That was the closest one. I had never traveled, never been away from home. And so that was a big step to go an hour and a half away to college. I can remember the day I left, my mom, she took me put her hands on both of my shoulders. I'm crying, she's crying. She says, "You don't have to go. Why don't you just stay home with me? It'll be okay." But I knew, no, it wouldn't be okay. I gotta go. And so I gave her a hug, kiss, and then I left, and I never regretted it. But that was the second year of the school. But 25 years later, I was going to take the master's class, and I thought, they're not going to have my records. I got to send my records so that I can be approved for master's in education. And within 10 days, I got a letter, and they said, "We've already received your records. You are enrolled, and you can start classes anytime you want." And it was amazing. I thought, wow, my teachers back then, they really knew what they were doing. They really did make permanent records. And so as teachers, that's a big responsibility that we close up everything completely and accurately. And then the second one, summer is great for getting rid of clutter. I love to throw things away. I think it's after you spend 16 years in a travel trailer, and we would go from church to church, and people want to be kind and sweet, and they are. We seldom found mean, angry people in evangelism. That's why we stayed 16 years. But the fact of the matter is they give you things. They don't realize the concept that you're living in this travel trailer, and first it's you and your husband and one child, but then you have two, and then you have three, and then the fourth comes along, and there's no room. And so I always was sorting through. I tried to keep the valuable things, the things that would have sentimental value later on for our children or for myself, but it was constantly sorting. But in school, if you don't do that, you can become what today is becoming a very popular show, a hoarder. You don't want to hoard school things. I've met many teachers who are hoarders. Their room is so packed with things that you don't see education taking place, you see clutter. So you want to throw away anything that's clutter. If you know you're not going to need it, then get rid of it. And don't listen to that little voice that says, "I can't throw this away. I might use it someday." We all have that voice in our head. And just say, "I'm not a hoarder. It's gone." And so that will help you. Definitely, three, store materials that you know you will use again. There are some things that must be stored, but make sure you store them where you can find them. Don't store them and then lose them and can't find them again. Make sure you're organized in that way and you store them carefully. And it says, when you're in doubt, just throw it out. Don't keep things that you think, maybe I will, maybe I won't. Some things are definitely throw away. Some things are give away. And then other things are you must keep it. And then take time off for a vacation. Don't you like that one? And try not to think about teaching. Rest and recharge. And I always loved the summer because we would spend a lot of time at camps, and my husband would preach at camp a lot. In fact, some summers we had 10 weeks of camp. Camp this, all over the country. It was great for our kids to learn how to swim and go horseback riding. They learned everything they needed to know about sports, and I gave them everything they needed to know about learning, hopefully. But anyway, vacation should be a time for you to just rest and recharge. And so always take, whether it's just not thinking about teaching for a couple weeks and staying at home and changing your schedule, or whether it's actually going on a vacation. Vacation is a great time to renew your passion to teach. I've talked to many teachers. They say, every year, I think this is my last year. And then over summer, I get excited about the next year, thinking, how can I improve? How can I do better? And they're back teaching again. And these are teachers who have been teaching for 25, 30 years. And so we all go through that time when, oh man, that class was so tough. I just can't take another year. But you know what? The next crop of students will be so much better. You just won't want to say goodbye to them. So we just had graduation in Sunday school. I've been teaching third grade Sunday school. In fact, some of my kids have gone from third grade all the way through college now. That's how long I've been teaching third grade. And so I see them in college. But anyway, three little girls are just bawling, hugging me. They won't go to fourth grade. I can't remember kids bawling about leaving me for Sunday school. I can remember, though, in teaching, some kids did. I remember one boy in fifth grade. He was crying. He said, "But I thought you were going to marry me someday." That was a long time ago, but he was crying, and so I thought, wow, that's amazing. But anyway, so kids will miss you. You do have an impact on their life. So summer's great to renew the passion to teach. And then six, reflect on the good things that happened during the year. Think of your successes, the things that maybe you tried, you had never tried before, and they really worked. And you think, I'm going to do that each year now. I tried it. It was a success. It really helped. I'm going to do that again. But also, later on, not right away after summer begins, don't think about your failures. You'll want to quit for sure. But just forget about those. And then in August or in late July, you can start thinking about, how can I solve this problem that it will never happen again? The last year I taught before we moved here, it was sixth grade. I had 26 students in sixth grade. And one boy was hyperactive. And when he was absent, and he was absent a lot, my class was just so easy. But when he was there, it was just constant helping and working with him. No matter what you did, he would do something. Like at Christmas time, we made an angel to go on the tree. It was an ornament. And this boy, I was supposed to use the glue gun and just glue on the wings, that's all. And the kids weren't supposed to work, even though they were sixth grade, with a glue gun. But, you know, he was the one who burnt his finger and had to go to the nurse and came back bandaged. And I had to call his parents and explain to them this whole thing. But he was like that. And so sometimes one student can make your class a totally different environment. And so you just have to learn solutions and helps that will help you to get by another year with a student like that. Then, during vacation, prepare your heart and renew your spirit to teach. Maintain a prayer list throughout the summer months. Don't forget your students during that summer. They're going to adjust to a new class, and so remember to pray for them, but pray for the new students coming in as well. And eight, read books. My summer, I love reading. And so leaders are readers. Read for pleasure, read for learning, read for inspiration. All of those will help you as a teacher. Some of my greatest books are just inspirational books written about teachers and classrooms and students that they had. And some of them make you laugh and some of them make you cry. But books like that are are there for a purpose. And so read and enjoy. Be aware of new tools for teaching. During the summer, isn't that a good time to see what new tools are out there? And so in English, I don't really use PowerPoint. So even though they put this lesson on PowerPoint for me, we're not really using it, because in English, you use the board. You don't really use PowerPoint. But I should start trying experiments with PowerPoint on English. I'm sure I could think of something that I could use PowerPoint for English, and it would probably help me. But think about tools that will help your classroom, and some are worth the purchase price if they're going to help make your life easier in the classroom. Review areas you want to improve next year. Always, teachers are thinkers. They're always thinking. They're always observing. They're getting ideas. All those years going to camp, I would have to go at least 2 times a week to the closest. When we got into town, I would take the car or the truck, and I would drive around looking for a laundromat. Not in the worst part of town, but it looked, you know, reasonable enough. Sometimes you had to take what you found. But one summer, I was doing the laundry, and this lady, and I'll never forget her, she had a box about this. It was a shoebox lid about this size, and she had all these green beans, like brown beans, you know, and they were all painted green. And she was meticulously, with a tweezer, gluing on moving eyes to those little brown beans. And I knew right away she's a teacher. And so I walked over and I said, "You're a teacher, so am I. So what are you making?" And she said, "The state of Michigan requires teachers now to go during summer school. You have to take 2 classes from a college to prepare you to teach, or you don't get to teach the next year." And I teach first grade. So I took one on teaching math for my first graders. So I have to come up with 10 ideas that my students can use to teach, to count 1 to 100. So she had 100 little brown, and she was making frogs. She showed me their little legs that she was going to glue on. She said, "I figured kids would much rather count frogs than they would, you know, round buttons or round pegs." And so she was making 100 little frogs. And I thought, wow. And, you know, sometimes we talk about public schools, but some public schools, their teachers work very hard. And she also told me they had just passed a law in Michigan that any disabled student, if the parents wanted them to, could come to the public school and be in a regular class. And she said last year was the first time that it happened. She had 3 disabled children, plus she had 20 other children. So she had a class of 23, 3 of them disabled that she had to work with and teach, plus 20 others. And so you talk about us, you know, being busy in Christian school, public schools are kind of tough too, especially depending on where you teach. So she really impressed me. We had a great time talking. So tools, very important. Areas you can improve the next year. Think about, you know, what can I do to help my first graders learn to count? And maybe making frogs would be an idea. You never know. But you can get ideas everywhere. And summer is the time to get acquainted with new additions. Here at West Coast, additions go out like crazy. And every year you get a notice from Brother Cox, you no longer have a textbook for, and he gives you your class. Then we have to decide, am I going to hunt for a new edition, a new book totally, try to get old editions? And we go through the process. Sometimes it's easier to write your own book. And so a lot of the teachers have just written our own booklets that the kids buy and use, and we leave the blanks in, and we can do all kinds of things like that, but sometimes that's easier. So new additions, new procedures, or new class changes. What's going to happen if the principal comes and says, "You're not going to teach first grade next year, you're going to teach fifth grade"? Are you going to say, "I can't do that, I'm going to have to quit, I don't know how to teach fifth grade"? Or are you going to adapt to that new class change? I taught 4 years, and every year I was given a different class. So I started out with fifth grade. The next year they gave me second grade because they hired a man. And they thought, I think the man, he wouldn't want second, but he would want fifth. So can you teach second? So I didn't get mad and say, a man is going to teach fifth? I've already taught fifth. I just said, sure, I'll teach second. So I taught second. And then the next year I taught seventh and eighth. And then the next year I taught sixth. In sixth grade, I ended up teaching it in two different schools, but two times, sixth grade. And the last time I taught sixth grade was the 26 students. That was my biggest class, 26. Anyone have a bigger class than 26 you got to teach? How many do you have?
I had
37
first grade.
37 by yourself, first grade. Wow, we need to give you a hand. We need to give you an award, don't we? That's amazing. That is amazing. That's great. Anyone else have a class bigger than 26? Okay. I just talked to one of our graduates, and she said, I'm going to teach second grade, and I only have 12 students. And I went, that's a great beginning class, 12 students. That's awesome. And I said, but don't get in your heart 12, because you might get there this fall, and there might be 15 or more kids enroll. I mean, parents enroll their children different times. So don't think you're going to have 12. You might have more. And she said, that's what they told me, too. So you don't know about that. Okay, next one is, keep your eyes open for any new ideas regarding teaching or curriculum. There might be a better, you know, book for your subject than the one you're using. Always be aware of that. Think and prepare for your opening week. I think the first day of school should be spectacular in every way. You should definitely teach the first day. You don't want to be like the little boy who his mom all summer said, you're going to be in kindergarten, you're going to learn to read and write and even add and do math. And he was all excited. So when he came home the first day, he just had this countenance that was so disappointing, like he was going to cry. And his mom said, didn't you like school? It was okay. Well, did you like your teacher? I don't think she's a very good teacher. And his mother said, honey, she's supposed to be a very good teacher. Why do you think she's not a good teacher? Well, she read us a good story. I liked that. But I don't know how to read or write or do math. I guess he thought the first day he was going to learn all those things. You know, that's what his mom said. So it's like our youngest son, Eric, he thought when Christmas came and Christmas vacation came that he was finished with school. And so he told me, he says, I'm so glad that's over. And I thought he meant, you know, he's ready for vacation. So we had a great time, and it was getting close to school. And I said, so we have to start getting your clothes ready and get ready, go back to school. He says, I'm not going back to school. I'm done. And he was convinced that he was done with school. He had made it halfway through kindergarten to Christmas. He's going to be a senior this year at West Coast. So, you know, we made it almost. I'll never forget that. I did something that probably a teacher shouldn't do. But at the time, I was teaching college, not elementary. And so I wasn't thinking. I was just thinking, how am I going to get my child to finish kindergarten? So I went to the teacher and I said, I've homeschooled all of our children. This is the first one I've had in school. So I'm just wondering, if he gets up every morning and doesn't cry and he goes to school, do you think it would be all right if every Friday I come and get him for lunch and take him to McDonald's? McDonald's is right down the street. And she said, I guess that would work, but you have to make sure you get him back in 35 minutes. That's all they get. I said, oh, we can manage that. So every Friday I would come pick him up and take him, and every week he would not cry, he would not complain, he would just get up right away, get dressed, go. He was so good, and I didn't think any. I thought, yes, oh, thank you, Lord, this is working. And then one day I found out that he was the hated kid in the class because all of them wanted to go to McDonald's, and they would go home and tell their mom, and she'd say, well, we can't come and take you to McDonald's. I don't know why. I guess because he's the executive vice president of West Coast Baptist College, he gets to do that. He's a privileged child. That's why. And so it wasn't good for our first year at college. But anyway, he enjoyed it, and he made it through kindergarten. So that was good. Okay. But make your first week really spectacular. And we're going to talk more about the classroom in a little while. Remember to stay in touch with your pal, the principal, during the summer. Just keep in contact with him. The administration, if the pastor is your administrator, make sure that you keep in contact with him as well. Don't become a ghost during the summer and people are wondering, where's the teacher? I don't see her. You should be very accountable during the summer. And then use your summertime wisely. Recharge, but don't become lazy during the summer. Don't start sleeping in and not getting much accomplished because it's summer and you're resting for school. Of course, if you have kids, it's hard to rest past, 7 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, summer will pass, so make the most of your time and enjoy summer, but look forward to the fall. So the next one is classroom preparation. I've been in a lot of classrooms. I notice classrooms wherever I go, and some of them say, this is a room for learning. This is a time for learning. And others, they say other things. They say, like, they're cluttered, that they're disorganized, that they're not really prepared for teaching. And you go, well, how does the classroom say that? Well, there's a lot of things we can do in a classroom that says this is a place to learn. And so some of these go along with that. But many teachers do not realize the importance of change. We just, had a whole political cycle, and that word change became so important that it elected President Obama over change, hope and change. But change is important in the classroom. You cannot expect to have this great classroom in September and have it look exactly the same when they are done in May, when they leave. And you don't change your bulletin boards. You don't change anything. Students who are learning, they have to be motivated by appearance, and sight really does teach. And so it's very, very important that you change your room on a regular basis. You should change your room monthly. When I first started teaching, the first school I taught at, every single month, everything on the walls had to come down at the end of the month, and all new things had to go up before the first. So we usually tried to get a weekend before the first to do that, and we would spend, a lot of time on Saturday changing our room. But it takes a lot of preparation to think. You have to have the things prepared so you can put them up. And so some classes, they are full of bulletin boards, and some might only have one. But just because you have one bulletin board doesn't mean that's all you got to change. You need to make your room say, this is a place to learn. And so I think the greatest example of this to me was a kindergarten teacher. Every month, she transformed her room into something unbelievable. One month was under the sea. When you walked in the door, you really felt you were under the water. She had seaweed coming down from the ceiling. She had a well, a life-size well on the back wall, the entire well. It was just, cardboard or paper, but it was painted like a well, and it was on the back, and it had water, and it had the fish by it. She had seashells. She had nets down on the kids' desk, and their names were on seashells, and she had unbelievable, and I thought, whoa, this is amazing. But then after September, October came, and she turned the whole thing into a castle. And outside her door was actually a knight in shining armor. It was the real metal. It was everything that she had purchased. And that welcomed them, this knight, leading them into the room. And she had transformed the room into a castle. And so it was unbelievable. But what was more unbelievable about this teacher, by the time those kids were out of kindergarten, she would put outside her door the best work. And before the year was over, they were writing not just paragraphs, but papers. And they were unbelievable stories. And they were written in this beautiful penmanship. And it was like, this is unbelievable. She is an amazing teacher. And every year for 5 years, she had said, I got to retire. This is getting too much for me. And everyone would say, no, you can do it. They lived outside of town, and they had a barn, and the barn no longer had animals. And so she had all of her props for every month, and she had a place to put them all. and she knew exactly what she was going to do, and she was, it was unbelievable. But how they learned was unbelievable as well. And so don't you think what they saw motivated them to learn as well? A teacher that goes to that much work, and she, her husband helped her a lot with the big stuff, but it was amazing. And so she changed every month, and they couldn't wait till the first of the month to go and see the room. And then something that teachers don't do all the time, some do, but use desk name tags and change them monthly too. And it's easy to do a name tag for the months. You can do snowman, you know, if it's winter. You can do a leaf in the fall. And so it's easy to do, but name tags, it goes with your change, and it helps them. And then I always change the desks around. Every month they got their desk changed. Sometimes one time I had a big circle in the room. Sometimes they were up and down. Sometimes they had two desks together. But every month I just changed it, and they had name tags. And so they would come in, and they would have a good time looking for my desk. I wonder where I'm going to sit. I would always make sure they sat by someone different, and they always looked for that. That was a change. And so if you're sat in the same seat, you know, sometimes pastor says he can look out and take attendance by where we're sitting. But you change where you sit, you learn differently. And who you're sitting by changes you as well. And so name tags are good. And move your students' desks monthly, configure desks differently. Plan each month around a theme. So we talked about that. Surprise your students occasionally by changing the classroom routine. Every once in a while, about once a month, we would have a craft. We would make something very special. Sometimes it was a gift for mom. Sometimes it was a gift for dad. Sometimes it was something we would hang in the room first, and then we would give it to someone. Sometimes we would make a present, and they would choose who got the present. They couldn't keep it for themselves. But just surprise them. Sometimes I would just send a note home to the parent and just say, don't bring lunch on Friday, lunch is on me. And so we would have pizza on Friday or something. We'd stay in our room and we would have a lunch together, something that would surprise them and be different. So you can think about all kinds. It says, don't get so addicted to your curriculum that everything is surrounding your curriculum. And you think, if I take off and do that for a half an hour, I will totally be out of my, you know, curriculum. No, you won't. And so it helps. It helps your students, and it helps you as a teacher as well. Maintain an organized room. Do not become a hoarder. We already said that. Maintain a classroom area for students who finish early with assignments. You should always never let your student just sit at his desk doing nothing. Or make sure if they get done with a test that they have a book that they can open and start reading the book. But also have a table if they get done with a worksheet first. Don't think it's going to be chaotic if they go to a table and get, you know, reading or worksheet or puzzles or art supplies. Doing something is better than them just sitting there quietly waiting for the next thing to happen. One criticism of Christian school is that students are required to be quiet all the time. There's no real interaction. Some schools don't even let them talk during lunchtime. When they're eating, they can't talk because then they don't eat and they have to eat, and so, or the parents get mad, so they can't talk. And there's no place for them to talk except out on recess. And so that's not good. You should have your kids interact with each other in the classroom. And so you can plan some of these areas that they can work with. With those 26 kids, we had 5 computers in the class. And so when kids got done, they could go and sit at one of the computers and work on math. They were all programmed with educational games. We never had anyone get out of control over that. I thought at first, oh, they're going to try to hurry through and get poor grades. But if they didn't get an A or B, then they couldn't do it the next time. They had to make sure that they had an A or B so that they didn't rush through to get done, just so they could get at the computer. But it worked great. And so never allow students to sit without working. And remember, an attractive classroom proves you are engaged and excited about learning. And then preparation. And again, I think I'll just read these. Curriculum is very, very important, of course. So study any new curriculum textbooks thoroughly. How can you teach if you have not read through your own textbook? Or if the school gives you a teaching manual and the principal or the pastor, whoever is conducting the getting ready for school, back to school, he says, now make sure you read everything in this manual. And you take it home and put it on a bookshelf and don't even read it. You think, oh, he already talked about that in his classes. I don't need that. I mean, that's not good. And so you should read what's given to you to read and make sure you know your textbook from beginning to end. Very, very important. Think of projects you can do and incorporate them into the curriculum. Test and quiz often in your classroom. Keep your students accountable for learning continually. I give lots of quizzes and tests. Know the scope and sequence of your class. So if you read your book, you know exactly what you're going to be teaching. Make notes of that so you know how and how far you should be in the year at different times. So you're not like some teachers, they get done with half the book and the student says, school's over, but I didn't finish this book. I only got to here. A student shouldn't say that. You should be able to finish what the curriculum states, or they're going to be deficient the next year. Keep your grade book always available in your desk to talk with the student, to talk with the parent, to talk with your principal about any problems. Your grade book should be well organized and always with you. I started teaching here in 1996, and I have every grade book. And my husband, he laughs at me sometimes. He says, don't you know that's all in the computer now? We have all those grades. But you know what? There's been a few times they will call me up, and they'll say, did you have this student in 2002? And I'll say, just a minute, I'll see. And I go right to my shelf where I have all of them listed. I pull 2002, open up. Yes, I had him for regular English 101. Why? We just got a request for his transcript, and for some reason we don't have that grade. And so I can give him the grade. So always keep it. I like one on hard copy and on computer. Don't allow students to grade their own work. It's not good. You're the teacher, and why waste their time grading each other's work? They might grade each other wrong, or they might give each other good grades. You don't know. You have to grade it all over anyway or review it, so don't waste their time. You learn a lot about your students when you grade their work. Know and understand the taxonomy scale. Know how a child's brain works and how it progresses. Memorize these and study how to test in each category. Use it in teaching and testing your students. Use lesson plans for short and long-term goals. Very important. And make it a rule never to go home Friday unless your lesson plans are done in their entirety for the next week. Prepare copies of tests, quizzes, worksheets, handouts the night before and have them lined up in what order they're going to be handed out so you can just simply go to your pile, pick up the top, and it's for reading. This one's for math, and it saves so much time instead of, okay, we're going to take a break now, and while you're in recess, I'm going to be doing your test, or I'm going to do a worksheet, and you're running to the copy room. You should have all of that ready to go. A prepared, organized classroom is a controlled, busy classroom. How important is that? Did I skip some about preparations? Nope, I got those. Okay, so did I get all of your things? Okay, so now let's just end. Oh, real quick. Number three and the last one. Okay, number three in preparation and curriculum. Oh, preparation and curriculum and preparation and classroom preparations, yeah. So the last one is preparation and curriculum. That's right, you got a blank there, huh? Okay. Now, in conclusion, I want to tell you, what is the purpose of all the work that goes into teaching? And the purpose is that we really do need the next generation to be grounded in the Word of God. And if we aren't doing a good job in the classroom, they will not be. They will go off to secular college. They will learn that Christianity is old and it's dead, and they don't need it anymore. And they will teach them new things. And we don't want that. We have to raise the next generation for the Lord, or the Bible and Christianity is going to get extinct. We're going to have more Muslim people, more worshiping Islam and witchcraft and all the other things going on. Our society is changing so quickly. Why? Because we haven't really taught our children, that homosexual marriage is not marriage, that marriage is defined, and it's been defined since the beginning of time as one man and one wife, and they can have children. I just had a college student right before college was out. He came to me and he says, "So what is your position on this anyone can marry anyone? It is kind of their choice who you marry, isn't it?" And I said, "No, it isn't your choice. If you want to live with a man, or if two women want to live together, that is their right, but it's not their right to call that a marriage. It's not a marriage at all. The Bible has already defined marriage as what it is. And the thing that they will never be able to do, they will never be able to have children. And God says to multiply and replenish the earth. They cannot do that. And that's why God planned marriage and has the home, so that we can replenish the earth with like-minded children. And so if you came from a godly home, even if you didn't, my dad didn't get saved till he was 63 years old. But he did get saved, and he lived to be almost 95. So, I praise the Lord for that. But I didn't grow up in a Christian home. But I was a bus kid, and I determined that my home would be a Christian home, and it has been. But it's so important that we teach knowing who we're teaching. We're teaching the next generation. We have a big responsibility, and we cannot take it lightly. Whether you're teaching your own children, I was able to do that. I taught in a classroom. I'm teaching those. And just like this lady said, someone came up to her and said, "You had me in what grade? First grade." And here he is at the conference. That's the reward of teaching. When you can go somewhere and someone will come up to you and say, "You taught me English. I didn't know English until I had you as a teacher." Or, "I had you in second grade. You were my favorite teacher." And I have seen that happen all over since we traveled in evangelism for so long. I saw my students, I'll never forget when I was teaching children's service, because while my husband preached to the adults, I preached to the children. And so there's this little boy sitting there, and I just knew I knew him. But this was a new church. I hadn't been here before. And so I thought, I wonder who he is. And right after, his dad comes to pick him up. His dad was Michael Gray. He was in my second grade class, and now his son was sitting there in my children's service, and he looked exactly like his dad. And that wasn't their church. He heard that my husband was preaching there, and he told his son and his family, he said, "We're going to go to hear Dr. Getch preach because his wife was my second grade teacher." And so things like that are very rewarding, aren't they? And so, maybe you have to teach a while before it happens, but it will happen to you. And it's such a blessing when you have things like that happen. And so some of the kids, here at the college, they come up to me and they say, "I can still remember when you had the children's service at my church. I remember the stories that you told." And that's teaching too. And so teaching is an amazing reward because you're working with children. And I love the verse, "Suffer the children to come unto me, forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of God." Children have such an amazing faith, and we have the opportunity to work on that faith and to teach them things that hopefully they will remember for a lifetime. And so I congratulate you, whether you're teaching Sunday school or Christian school or homeschool or public school. It doesn't matter where you teach. The important thing is that you are making a difference in the lives of the students in your classroom. Don't ever forget that. And God is definitely on your side. So, okay, it's time for us to go in about a minute, so let's pray. And if you do have any questions, I will be here. If you have a quick question, we have about 3 minutes. Any question over anything? Okay. How many of you have been teaching for 5 years or less? 5 years or less, whether it's in Sunday school or church or church school or public school. Anyone here a public school teacher? Last year there were a lot of public school teachers, yeah. How many of you teach homeschool? Any homeschoolers here? Okay, a couple of those. And so the majority of you are Christian schools. Any Sunday school teachers, you don't teach Christian school? Okay, Sunday school, that's great, Sunday school. Yep. So, and some of us, we teach Sunday school and church school and homeschool. We do it all, don't we?